Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am Nicky P here as always. My guest today is Jane Sharp. Jane, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you came to do what you do?
Sure. Thanks for having me. Let's see. I've been married 26 years, which seems impossible. I have 5 kids. I've homeschooled them from the beginning. I've graduated most of them. So right now I'm focusing on school for my 12-year-old. And since I have so much more time and less students, I have begun to follow my childhood dream of being a writer. And I've self-published a bunch of books lately. And I am excited because I'm working on some new, I'm branching out into new kinds of books this year.
Awesome. What kind of books have you put out so far? And what are you looking to put out in the future?
So I have put out a bunch of themed alphabet books for little kids. And I've made activity books that match each of them for kids, like maybe the older siblings of the little kids that are enjoying my books. And then I realized I knew so much about self-publishing at that point that I wrote a sort of like a homeschool curriculum for families to use if they wanted to self-publish with their kids. But this is September. In October, I have my very first children's book with a plot coming out that I'm really excited about. And since that one is pretty much just needs to be launched, I've changed my focus and I'm writing out the outline for my first chapter book for the, 9 to 12-year-old age.
Okay. Now, given a little bit before the show, we actually talked about the ages of your kids. And it's amusing to me. It's like, I'd imagine that usually you do that stuff when you have kids of that age so you can like make it for them and then sell it after you've made it for them. Now, is this a process that's kind of like taking time to do and it's just now getting finished? Or is it just now you have the time? Obviously, taking care of 5 kids is a bit of a chore.
Oh, for sure. And it takes up all your energy. And when you're an attachment parent, it seems it takes up the whole night as well as the day. So at one time I had 4 kids and then we had a little bit of a gap and had the baby. So when I had the 4 kids, I had 4 kids under 7. So I was really busy, and then with homeschooling and activities and stuff, it was crazy for a good 10 years, I feel like. And then we had the baby and now he's 12. So I feel like I was really busy. And now, his school, he's getting to be more independent with a lot of it. And so I just had a lot of time on my hands and I had to figure out, what do I want to do with my time if I'm not pouring it into my kids and their education? I just had to fill the time somehow. And I have always wanted to be a writer. And so I wasn't making these for my kids. Like, I'm excited to share them with my grandkids and my nieces and nephews, but I was just making them because I just absolutely love the topic and it had to come out somehow.
Okay. And obviously, you're a homeschooling parent yourself. Is there a certain noticing the need that like kind of pushed you in the direction that you did? Most women your age I know are writing, romantic fiction of some kind because that's what sells really good. There's a huge audience for that. They eat it up, throw vampire in there and some cowboy kind of guy and complain about men while, also filling them full of every horrible trope about like the elf, what do you call that? The toxic male you possibly can in there. Like, oh, these horrible toxic male, now beat me up and
give me more of them. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, none of that was appealing. That literally didn't even cross my mind. I had actually been a part of a silly like Facebook thread where this one crunchy mom had started the alphabet, and she was like, let's just keep going around through the alphabet. Everybody fill in a letter and just, you know, after the person in front of you. And I just went on this kick after that post of just filling in all these themed alphabets. And I just was really excited to find, you know, Q, and, you know, some of the letters are really hard and I wanted them to be awesome. I didn't want them to just fill in a gap, like some dumb word because it had the right letter. So I put all this effort into these lists and I was like, wow, these would be so cool. And it just developed out of this dumb thing I did online with a bunch of other crunchy moms making a list of letters. And I came up with, I think, five at the end of my projects. I think I have six alphabet books that I'd like to do. I have done, I have four of them finished, and I have one in the pipeline and two I haven't started yet. So I guess seven. So it was just because there was a gap, you know?
Now, thematically, what are those books like? Obviously, they're books for kids, but like, obviously, what are the themes that you used for your different alphabets?
Okay, so it started with that Facebook thread of crunchy moms. And so, I mean, I think at the end of that post, there was like almost 250 comments. And so I pulled the top, it was more than 50. It was two full alphabets of crunchy living words. Some of them have, so like crunchy moms, you know, the moms with no food coloring and the amber necklaces and all that. And so it was just these, one was like crunchy mama and then one was like extreme crunchiness. And it was like leveled up a little bit of crunchiness.
I remember the amber necklaces. So I'm just like laughing inside so much right now.
And so I had learned in some of my like self-education about marketing that a series is a great tool to help people find your other books, because when you link them in a series, people, if they like the one that they happen to find, they'll go and look for the other ones. So because crunchy parents are always like just ingredients households and not, you know, pull out the Cheetos and the animal crackers, I made a book called Kitchen Helper ABC, and it has like a whole bunch of like verbs and nouns that are in the kitchen with like illustrations for kids. And then there's two more books in that. No, there's one more book in that series that I have not finished yet. Then I have the one that I have finished is another niche that's near to my heart, which is like the Second Amendment and gun safety. So I have an alphabet for that book. And the one that's going to be ready it's not going to be out until January or after, but it's about traveling. And so it's a whole alphabet of traveling words. And then I have one, the alphabet's ready for a grilling, like a meat alphabet, like outside with dad on the grill kind of theme. So that one is just right now a word list. It hasn't gotten started yet.
Okay. Interesting. Now, I'm curious, do you have like bigger ambitions past like the writing to do like more of a community-based kind of thing, since that's where all the real money is? But I guess the one thing that we learned, so obviously I don't know, your kids might be a little bit older, but like when 2021 hit and it blew up all of the co-ops and communities around us, and it was, what was hilarious is you watched like the big split down the middle of all of them, we'll just say, where some people went one way and some people went a different way. I know so many of those people have like gone online looking for the communities that they've lost when that happened. Is that something that you plan kind of like as a next step, or you just kind of like the writing part of it and that's where you want to keep it?
I am really excited about the chapter book series that I'm starting this fall. But as far as online community goes, I have created like a class community that I'm looking to build for my homeschooling curriculum, because I think I have found as my kids get older, they're not as interested in mom's feedback, because, you know, when you're homeschooling, you're the teacher and you're the mom. And so there's a lot of your same voice in their head, and they can really do well when they're getting feedback from somebody else. So I have set up the ability to build a community of kids that are working through self-publishing projects, and I'm excited about that. But because that's where I'm excited about the writing, I don't really envision like a crunchy mom community. And I really enjoy meeting people that like my gun safety books. But it's sort of like a bonus for them because they're always there for some other big activity. And books are not as exciting as like the hands-on stuff they do at those activities.
Yeah, for real. You mentioned when you're doing your studies on marketing, what did that entail for you? Because like I said, when people I generally talk to, like they're either terrified or like loathsome of just the word marketing. Even though it's what's going to be the thing that makes their book sell or not, they don't want to touch it. So what did you do for that?
I hate the work of it. So I was watching Lord of the Rings with my son the other day.
Which version?
I'm just nerd adjacent. I warned you. It's the one where, okay, so I was going to tell you the quote and then you'll figure it out. It was the one where they all are going, and he says, they're all fighting. I want the ring. And he says, I'll take it. And he goes, but I don't know the way. And so I think it's where they all band together and they go, you know, they try to throw it in the thing. It's the one after The Hobbit.
That was my question for my wife. She's a Lord of the Rings nut.
Okay.
And the real answer was, well, the extended editions, of course.
Yeah.
You know, we sat there for, I think once a month, she sits down and watches 14-hour.
Oh my gosh.
Their daughter.
So I watch them sometimes, but I'm usually doing something else also.
Yeah. That too. It's usually cleaning the kitchen.
Right. I'll watch Clue 3 times a week for myself, giving it my full attention. But for Lord of the Rings and stuff, I will be watching it with my son. But anyway, about marketing. So we were watching it the other day, and Frodo like stands up and he walks forward and everybody's fighting and he's like, I'll take the ring. And then he looks really uncertain. He goes, but I don't know the way. And I was like, oh my gosh, because I had you on my schedule and I've been to your website and I showed my son your website and he's like, oh, this is amazing. I have to buy this book. Like, these are my people. And he was like really excited and he's 12. But when I saw that,
that's awesome.
Yeah, he's. I really try to encourage it. He likes to see successful adults that game because he's like, wow, I don't have to give this up when I grow up. And I'm like, no, you don't.
Well, and that was a huge realization for me and why I'm creating the book in the first place, because it was a matter of you get into self-limiting beliefs. If you start getting into marketing or sales, you obviously come up with those because it's like the biggest hurdle everyone is getting out of their own garbage, their own baggage. And was coming to the realization for myself, it's like, well, I like being a nerd, but that doesn't mean like I have to own all the negative crap that goes along with being a nerd. Like, I can just like nerdy things and still be a successful human. I don't have to pretend that the world loathes me because I like D&D, because it's just not the truth anymore, if it ever was.
Yes, exactly. And so I really excited. My older 4 kids were not as nerdy as my youngest is, and they really just embrace it. And they're like, you know, fly that flag, buddy. You're having fun. And so it was really like a cool quote for me to find the other day when I knew I was going to be talking to you, because that's how I feel about marketing. I was like, I have no idea what to do or how to move forward, but I'm willing and I need to do it. Like, it needs to be done. And so that's my take. Like, I don't enjoy it as much as I enjoy creating. But if I want anybody to enjoy what I have created, then I need to get out there and tell people about it. And so I don't like the online work of it. I really have enjoyed talking to real people. Like, if I go to a gun show or I go to like a market day or I talk to people at the park or wherever I meet actual people who like my book, it's very encouraging. And it really energizes me for when I'm like dragging myself through online activities to market the books.
Well, and I'd imagine that the types of books that you're selling, number one, there's a lot of offbeat places that don't have a lot of books that you would absolutely fit in at. Like you said, you go to gun shows, the farmers markets, I'm sure are great. Like, any homeschool days at anything, like any place would be great. Like, there's just lots of places that you can set up shop and hawk that you're going to be the only thing of your that's there. Just there's not a lot of it.
Yeah. So when I made the gun safety book, I was looking online and I was like, this kind of stuff that's available just looks like unprofessional. Like I didn't love any of it. I wasn't excited to buy it and give it to somebody. I felt like it was just what was out there. And so I tried really hard to make something that I would be proud to share or to sell. Cause I mean, it is homemade. It is self-published. You know, I put it together, but I don't think it has to be like second grade quality. I think it can be a great product. And the best part, so when I first started, my husband was like, you shouldn't do crunchy mama stuff. You shouldn't do gun stuff. You know, not everybody's interested in that. You should, you know, have a wider market. And I was like, no, just the small bit I know is that niche markets are great because you can like laser in on those people who have a very specific interest. And there might be very little in that niche for them to like share with their kids, especially in this age group. And so having that laser focus is actually better because everybody in the whole country, you know, buys alphabet books for their little kids. So there's a massive competition for that. You know, you've got the very hungry, you know, Caterpillar, you've got Dr. Seuss, you've got everybody that with massive budgets. But when you get down into a laser focus, like little kids learning to cook in the kitchen, or moms that are putting amber necklaces on their babies, or parents that are teaching their kids how to reload ammo, like that's a laser focused niche.
Yeah. And there's a lot more of those people, even in that niche, than you'd actually think.
Yes. But it's bigger than the A is for apple, B is for ball. I mean, it's not bigger. It's more focused. You know, it can be a really big thing.
It's a starved market is what it is. I don't know. Do you follow Connor Boyack and the Tuttle Twins at all?
I do because
and
actually
look how successful he was doing just that. Like,
yes.
And what it boils down to is because certainly in like the libertarian world, that's where I come from and why, you know, I know Connor. The one thing we always complain about is there's a lot of people that make like really crappy ideological art. And he was certainly in the children's book space the first person that like came out of the gates like, oh, he nailed the making something that's creatively valuable, like not crappy, and like suits the need that we want. It's that's a hard part, like, because everyone tends to get so wrapped up in the ideological end of things that they forget that like, no, it has to be good or people still won't buy the thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I was excited. I saw a ad by him and it used the hateful reviews and comments that he was getting about his series. And I was like, oh, I have like 4 1-star reviews. And I immediately went and made them into memes for my book because having a succinctly like denigrating comment or insulting review about your book, sometimes when it's so perfectly worded, it will exactly tell the other side of the coin that they will love it. You know, like it will be so perfectly, like one of my 1-star reviews, she said, teaching kids about guns is child abuse. So when you read that and you know it's not, you will immediately be like, well, maybe I'll love this book if this lady doesn't like it. And so I learned that from the Tuttle Twins ads, where they twisted their bad reviews into good advertising.
Well, and here is this, what is it? I don't know. Have you ever heard of the one sentence persuasion course? So this is it is literally one sentence, and this describes so much of the marketing of probably at least the past 10 years, and definitely the past, you know, 3 and 4. I don't know if I'm allowed to read this, but to heck with it. So the one sentence is, people will do anything for those who encourage their dreams, justify their failures, allay their fears, confirm their suspicions, and help them throw rocks at their enemies. And that's why those 1-star reviews work so good, is because that's the throwing rocks at your enemies part. That's how you show people, like, I'm one of you. We ideologically align and you want to buy my stuff because I'm just one of you. And it's like, when you get down into it, that's so much of what you're actually doing is just trying to find people that, you know, everyone kind of wants to buy from. They want to support the people that are like them. And okay, well, if this is something you're about, then here's the big old thumbs up. Let's make me some money. Now, one of the things that you brought up was confidence. And confidence, obviously, we mentioned it, getting over yourself is a big thing in any kind of marketing or sales. What did that look like for you? Like, if you specifically say, you know, worded it with like knowing that no matter what the haters say, you're going to create what you want to create. What did that look like for you kind of doing your thing?
It looked like a lot of fighting, I feel like. I would get feedback. I would get feedback and people would say, oh, yeah, that's a bad choice, or this is too extreme, or I don't know what this is. And I would be like, well, the people that would love this, they know exactly what this is. Like, so on the cover of my first Crunchy Mama ABC book, I had an amber necklace was on the cover. It was like making a circle around the title. And I was on some self-publishing group and I was like, what do we think about this cover? Is it clear? Is it succinct? Like, do we like this cover? And I got this lady, she was like, you should not have that necklace. That's a choking hazard. It's unapproved by the FDA. It is there's no science behind the amber necklaces. That's just terrible. And you're putting children in danger. And I was like, well, you're not my demographic, I guess. Like, you're not the person I'm selling this book to, you know?
I think my daughter wore hers till she was three.
And so I was like, I appreciate your feedback, but like the people that will love this book don't agree with you. And I'm making this book for them. So I was confident that I knew what a crunchy mom would like. And you have to just fight off the people in the whole process. Like when I was making my list, my daughter was like, medical liberty, that's too extreme. You can't say X factor. I'm like, there are three X's in X factor. I am not using that word. It fits in my extreme book. I'm going to, and she's like, it's too inflammatory. And I was like, well, the people who like this will like it. So it was like fighting with people who were giving me feedback before I was finished. And knowing who my audience was. And so being confident in who my audience was, like, you know, that you have to have a degree of confidence in yourself that you're making a good product. But I think it was a lot of weeding through, like, is this good feedback? Is this bad feedback? Is this feedback that my demographic will appreciate? Does this not apply to me? And weeding through that kind of feedback and defending my work to people that just weren't in my demographic.
Well, that, to me, it's interesting because it's like, how can you critique anyone's anything without knowing who the intended audience is? And like, a lot of different audiences out there. So just to tear something down without like whether or not, and maybe this is because you like writing books. I really like reading books and I like looking at psychology. That's how I get into marketing, is I love thinking about how people think and the words that, like, what words do to a person. And whether or not I like or have any feelings about what someone's writing, like, I still have to look from a marketing perspective and from like the knowing your audience perspective. I have to look and go, it's like, okay, well, whatever my feelings are no longer matter. When I'm looking at this, I have to think, who is, you know, the individual client avatar or whatever it is that you're aiming at? What is the ideal person that's going to purchase this? And are the words, the themes, the imagery, are they going to appeal to that person? And it's like, for anyone to like give advice that doesn't take that into consideration at the very least, it just seems like, you don't know what you're doing there. But
I feel like people want to just tear down. They don't want to pause and look and see, like, who's this aimed at? Is somebody going to enjoy this? They just want a knee-jerk reaction of what they themselves feel instead of like thinking about, you know, what that person that it's aimed at, it, like I'm not going to buy a book about how to like put shingles on my roof or something, but a roofer would be interested in that book. So I can't tell somebody, oh, nobody would buy your book about roofing. What is this asphalt cover that I don't like the cover? And it'd be like, well, a roofer knows that this is a shingle, you know, like that's a weird example, but everybody has their niche and their knowledge and they know way better than some critic.
Well, and you know, the dog whistles, you know, the signals, you know, what things mean to your niche at the very least. It's like, it was a good way to know she wasn't your target audience when she goes on a tirade about the necklace.
Absolutely. Yes. And so you have to have a confidence to not like say, oh my gosh, should I take that off the cover? Like, whoa, I had this one strongly worded person hated it. Like, should I reply to that? Should I change my project for them?
Well, more importantly, do you as an author, do you take what I would take that as is go, okay, this is an even better signal to my audience now. Like, because this is a signal to the people that shouldn't be reading this book. Don't read this book. You're going to see this and this should get away. We don't need you.
Yes. And so the lady that was my ideal demographic, the person who I was running things by to see what she thought of them, she was my avatar in real life. She ate it up. Like I have, like, they love it. They love it. And I know that I've done a good job because they just giggle and laugh and they point things out and their kids know what the words are. I had a paid review, which I would never do again. I had a paid review and he said that the words I chose for my alphabet book were so far too advanced for a young child learning the alphabet that nobody should buy it and I shouldn't have made it because the words were too advanced for the children.
Sounds like somebody who doesn't have homeschool kids.
Right? I was like, literally, I chose, like, he was like, I didn't even know what kombucha was. And I'm like, well, then you're not a crunchy mom who's buying this book. A, like, if you don't know what kombucha is, if you don't know what the words in my book, like zeolite, nobody knows what zeolite is until they're in this group that knows what zeolite is. And those people know what it is. And so you have to just, you know, it was a little hard to pay for a review and get such a bad one, but
and I don't want to harp on this, I imagine what a paid review is, but like, well, how do you go about that process? It's not something I've ever heard of anyone using, short of like paying for like a big author to review your book so you can get that name on there.
Yes. Well, so what I call endorsements are when I send my book to people that are some sort of authority to that demographic. So a chiropractor, a midwife, different people when you see, oh, a midwife, oh, a functional doctor, the crunchy moms would be like, oh, I know who that authority is. And I agree with that authority. So if they like the book, then I might like this book. That's what I call endorsements. I had never done this before. It was my third book. And I think it was through Goodreads. And so you submit your book, you can choose potential reviewers. So I chose people that were into homeschooling and like natural living. But if that person that you've chosen is busy or out of town, they just put it in the big pile and somebody who wants to earn the money, they review it. And it was awful. I took this class and they were like, oh, get a Goodreads review. I think it was Goodreads. And it was...
Well, Goodreads is a good place to go. I mean, that's where I will look for reviews when I look at books.
Well, you can look up my book and look at his horrible review, and then you can go leave like rebuttals below. Because I've had a couple people leave rebuttals. Like, my kids know what these words are. But yeah, that was, I don't know if I would do that again, especially in a niche market, because you're not going to find your audience that way.
I should hope not. If you need like people in that market bad enough, just give me a call and I'll make it happen. Because I certainly know enough people after years of being in the circles I've been where I could probably get you a name or two that would help.
There we go. I'll have to keep you on my speed dial.
We're kind of rounding to the end of things here. So is there anything that you would like to kind of get out there as like your advice to people that are terrified of marketing or they hate the idea of it? And, you know, kind of like the wisdom of your journey that you could like leave them with?
So one thing that I have found really helpful way back when I was first homeschooling and I wasn't confident in homeschooling. And then later when I was like, I wrote a book, do you want to look at it? Like I made like an elevator speech. And so that is like a few sentences of what you're talking about distilled down very succinctly. Because when I first started homeschooling, you know, somebody's at the grocery store and they're like, why are your kids aren't in school? And you stutter and you stammer and you say something. And then 2 hours later, you're like, I should have said this. This would have sounded so much better. And what you need is an elevator speech, is some sort of like short paragraph that tells somebody exactly what you're, you know, about. So I think having a speech like that for any project you're on, where when you're, so like when I contacted you, I had to give you a little sentence about what I was about. And when I meet somebody at the store who realizes I'm an author, or somebody comes up to my table on an event, you need to be able to speak coherently about whatever the topic is. And having that memorized and those words like at your disposal, whether it's in an email or it's out loud or whatever, that can lend you a kind of confidence, because you're not thinking on your feet and you can just plug it into the different places where you need it. And I think also just like I got that paid review and that was a fail and I wouldn't do that again. But I think just trying lots of different things. There's so, you know, some people are on TikTok and they love making videos and other people want to teach classes. And so like really what you're good at when you're comfortable, that's what you should chase after, even if it's uncomfortable at first because it's new and it's about your product. But I think if you're comfortable in front of a crowd in your real life, you'll become comfortable in front of a crowd about your project.
Right on. Well, we appreciate you coming out here and talking to my audience. And to everyone out there, I thought this was a good one. Hopefully you all guys agree. If you don't, you can email me and tell me whether you thought it sucked or not. I won't tell her that, but we'll keep it to ourselves.
All right. Well, I'm so glad to have been here. Thanks a lot.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.